Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. On behalf of Pastors David and Nicole Binion, thank you for joining us today at the Dwell Church Podcast. For more information about Dwell Church, visit us at dwell.church. Now, let's listen to today's message.
It really is exciting to be here at the beginning of the year. I love to go to new churches, especially new churches that I feel like are being planted by spiritual sons and daughters. And I hope that's okay that I call you that. So you can call me Daddy, and you guys can call me Grandpa. I don't need any official title. Just say, hey, Papa, and they'll know it's the guy with the white beard. I told Carson yesterday I was trying out for Santa Claus, and I didn't make it, but I'm working on next year. To come to churches that are, it's new, and I've done a lot in my ministry. I've been a lot of places. I've preached in 70 countries. Sometimes when I go places and it's new, they pull a biography of mine from the back of a book or an online place, and they start listing all those things, and I think, man, that guy that they're talking about has got to be really old to have done all of that. And then I get embarrassed, but all of it that we put out there it's true, but it can be a little bit off-putting to hear people talking to you about that, like in the third person, almost like you're already a part of history. And I want to say, I'm still here. I'm still trying to do some things. In fact, if God will allow it, I plan to go to a nation I've never been to in a couple short weeks, Nepal, to Kathmandu, the ceiling of the world. Kathmandu is the capital. It's 60 miles from Mount Everest. And pray for me. There are some challenges involved, and if the doors don't open just right, I may not be able to go. There's a missionary that is, he was in jail. He's now under house arrest for going to do exactly what I'm going to do. Will you pray? Yes. My wife keeps saying, are you sure about this? And I keep saying, as long as the doors keep opening. Well, it's easy for you to say amen. Till it's your kid going over there. But I do, as we used to say in old school church, I covet your prayers. Anybody ever heard that?
Yes.
So I do. But I'm excited. I've been in a lot of places. I've seen things. And I am at a point in my life, I feel really content. I feel really at ease in my own skin. I don't have anything to prove. Yeah. I'm not trying to write another bestseller. I'm not trying to make another movie, although we're working on one. It's just what happens, happens. I feel really comfortable about who I am and where I am. But it allows me to not be intimidated by the size of the crowd. Yeah. Not by how many, nor by how few. And that is a strange place to get to in ministry, because some people say, well, we're not after crowds. Well, I beg your pardon, Jesus was.
Wow.
Otherwise, why would he provide enough bread and fish to feed that many? He was concerned about the people and the crowds. So I have preached in well-established churches that have historical roots, hundreds of years, and I've preached in new church plants, and to be honest with you, I'd rather be right here with people like you at the beginning of what's going to be a great trajectory for what God's going to do for you. I kept just getting things downloaded into my spirit, and as David and Nicole continued to talk, I started trying to process everything I wanted to tell you, and I'm probably not going to get it out, Not going to get it all done. But when David started talking, he told me yesterday about how he felt when he went to the Wailing Wall. For those of you that may not really know what the Wailing Wall is, it's also called the Western Wall because it is the westernmost wall of what was Solomon's temple, as archaeologists tell us, and it's the only piece of, or maybe it's Herod's temple, it's the only piece of that temple, or the ancient temple, that is still existent. And in 1967, when Israel took back the territory of the city of Jerusalem, the soldiers ran crying, literally weeping, sobbing to the wall. And it's where it picked up its first terminology that we know, the Wailing Wall, as the Jews streamed back in and were able to touch a part of what had been off limits to them as their history. It was an incredible awakening. And it's become a touchstone. Presidents pray there. Prime ministers pray there. Non-Christians go, and whatever they do it there. But when shepherds go, there's a tradition about the Wailing Wall that you may or may not know, and you could go online and check it out, that people write their innermost prayers down, their deepest desires, their the thing that's they most want, the meaningful need of their life at that moment. They'll write it on a scrap of paper and roll it up, and they find cracks in the wall, and they push those pieces of paper in the wall as a way of saying, God, you've got mail. And wanting him to hear and answer that. So I understand what David felt. He felt exactly what Jesus was feeling in John chapter 17 when he was preparing to face the cross. In fact, that night of John 17 is what we know as the Last Supper. As far as the clueless disciples were, it was just another supper. Only Jesus knew it was the last one. So he was feeling a pressure that they didn't feel. Sometimes if you ever get discouraged about being a disciple, just reread the Gospels. Those guys were clueless. They'd be over here when Jesus wanted them over there. They'd be asleep when he needed them awake. They'd chase kids away when he was trying to attract them to come. Look at somebody next to you and tell them, if he can use them, he can use you. You feel better? I mean, they were kind of clueless. They had no idea what was coming, but Jesus felt the weight. And as a shepherd, as the great shepherd, in his prayer, David, he said, I pray not only for myself, but I pray for those whom you have given me. Pastors don't feel like they own people. But it's a strange thing. People feel like they own pastors. Because they say, that's mine. That's mine. And that's okay to feel that way, because you want leadership that you feel like has your best interest at heart. And as they have, I'm going to cry, but I'm trying not to. I've watched David and Nicole transition from just being the worship minister at a church to being worship leaders. And there is a difference. Because there are people that are assigned to be in charge of the worship at church, and they don't know how to lead people. Because you can't, I don't mean that ugly, but you can't lead people where you've never been. You can't be a tourist and be the tour guide. You understand? If this is your first time there, you can't be the tour guide. If you're going to be the tour guide, you have to have been there before. And I watched as David and Nicole blossomed, as they passionately put their heart to worship. I watched as doors opened to them in local ministry, in national ministry, and now internationally. And I was proud to be a part of a few of those things. And, you know, it used to be that people invited me and David and Nicole came along. Now, I'm wondering if I can hang along with them. But there, to be honest with you, there is no better feeling than to celebrate the success of somebody else. Because I've had my turn. Now, mind you, my turn's not over yet. My father-in-law, as he aged a little bit, and he was having, a hitch in his get-along, I offered for my assistant, Brian Larson, to drive him back. They know Brian well, to drive him back to the house from a church gathering thing. And he said, "I can drive myself." And you could hear him muttering as he walked off, as he shuffled off, "Don't put me in the grave yet. Don't put me in the grave." That's what I'm telling. Don't put me in the grave yet. I got countries to visit and people to see and places to do. But I'm also super excited, pumped, just to see people that I may have given a hand up and saying, "Hey, this is a good way to walk like this, and go this way," that they do incredible things. And I foresaw what was happening in David's heart as he transitioned. And he talked over with me the fact that he felt like he would start a church. Now, what I can't tell you is, well, no, I'm going to tell you, so I can tell you. Not every church starts like this. You have grace on you. Everybody tell somebody, we have grace on us. What are you, a year and a half old?
Almost.
When I was here in March, is March your year and a half? Well, kids are just starting walking about then. You look like you're running. Racing. Thank you. But I'm excited for you. I have a verse that is seemingly disconnected from my preaching, but I have to read this to you because it's something the Lord spoke to me. And it's an unusual verse found in Deuteronomy chapter 2. I don't know if they want to put it on the screen. I particularly like guys that, you know, that do the handwriting on the wall, people back there. If you can put it in New King James by chance. Deuteronomy chapter 2. This is when the children of Israel had been transiting the wilderness for a generation. There are churches that it takes a generation to get to where you are right now. But sometimes God puts people on expedited journeys, accelerated journeys. If you know anything about the story of the children of Israel leaving Egypt and traveling to the promised land, it didn't have to take them 40 years. In fact, they could have made it in 40 days if you study the history. And it for sure didn't take them 80 years, two generations, with one generation dying in the wilderness. That's the That's the description of a rat race. You're like that little mouse on a wheel in a cage. You're sure using up a lot of energy, but you're not making any forward progress. And sometimes churches feel that way, and then other times God just accelerates, and he puts an accelerant on. The difference between, they call flammable liquids an accelerant, because you can stick a match up under some kindling and it catches on fire, but as for the most part, fires start slow and small. Am I right? And then they'll get big. But they start slow and small. But if there is an accelerant put on the fire, then the same fuel that would start slow and small can start in an explosive fashion. I went to meet with one of my editors when writing one of the books. And have you ever met somebody, and you know, I've known him for years. We've worked together on, I've written 38 books, and he and I have worked together on at least 30 of them. I've known him for a long time. And you see them, and you don't know what's different, but something's different. Yeah. Now, all you women, you immediately notice, like, oh, the hair, it's this, the beard, whatever. Men, we don't notice that our wife has changed her hair color. Until she says something. And we say, oh yeah, I noticed. Come on, man, be honest. It's church. And I looked at Larry, and we're sitting there talking over things about a book, and hours pass, and I don't want to stare, but something is weird about his face. I mean, really weird. And I got it. He has no eyebrows anymore. They're gone. I'm not talking about thin. I'm talking about who shaved your eyebrows, Larry. And I even noted he don't have eyelashes. So I think, my God, is he in chemo? Or I don't know. So finally I said, Larry, what's up? You look different. He said, oh, this. I said, yeah, kind of. And he said, I was going to burn some trash in the yard. And I put a little too much accelerant on the fire. And I lost my eyebrows. I said, lesson learned. God can put accelerant and the same fuel that you could stand close to, you better back up from. And so when God puts accelerant on a people and their destiny, all I can say is you better back up. You might lose your eyebrows. God's doing something. Amen? These people had... It had taken them a long time. And it says, then we turned and we journeyed into the wilderness of the way of the Red Sea as the Lord had spoke by me. And we skirted Mount Seir for many days. The next verse said, and the Lord spoke to me and said, you have skirted this mountain long enough. Turn north. In other words, God said, are you tired of going around in circles? Yes. Make a turn right now. I want to predict that you're not even aware of it, but, you know, Noah's building or houses first, and I don't know, was there something between houses and Noah's building and Noah's building and... Man, you guys have got, I came in here yesterday. There was cases up here big enough you could raise children in them. And guys measuring to see if they can fit more equipment, measuring them by the inch. So diligent were they about making sure everything gets set up so you can come here on Sunday morning and worship in the way that you do. Can I tell you, there's going to come a day when you won't have to do that. You're going to get your own place. And don't be surprised at how accelerated God does that in according with your faithfulness. You see, one of the things that delayed the children of Israel's arrival in their promised land was they caught the fear flu. When the spies came back and they said, this is the land. Because when the first time they approached that promised land, Moses sent 12 spies out, check it out, see if it's good. And they came back and they had incredible language. They are the first ones to use the words, it flows with milk and honey. Yeah. Those guys said it, trying to articulate how bountiful and plentiful the land was. And most of Israel, well, first they all heard that yes, you know, grapes as big as basketballs and, you know, whatever it is. And now there's 10 of the spies that put a P.S. at the end of their report. How many of you know what P.S. stands for? Read this first. That's what you do, isn't it? So the P.S. in the spies report, 10 of them, said, but, and I'm quoting King James, I think it says, but there be giants there. Two of the spies said, and their postscript, we are able. In other words, they didn't argue that the other guys needed new glasses or that I'm sorry they didn't see giants. They just said, regardless of what anybody says they saw or they saw, it doesn't matter, we are able. But for some reason, the multitude of Israel gravitated toward the fear-filled message of, oh my God, we've traveled all this way. And now we have some giant obstacles. Instead of saying, well, he didn't bring us this far to turn around and leave us. I feel a little amen in that. He didn't bring us this far to abandon us here at the threshold of our victory. And for those of you that have been on the journey called Dwell Church, you haven't come this far for him to turn around and leave you now. Keep marching. But because that fear entered the end, do you know that fear is contagious? You knew that? I'll tell you what, laughter is contagious. You let somebody, even you may be eating dinner somewhere and somebody at another table just something so funny, it starts cracking them up and they forget about their protocol and they're just belly laughing and you don't even know what the joke is. But you can't help it. You just start smiling too. Why? Joy is contagious. I'd rather catch a good case of joy than a... Have you ever heard, listen to our language? We say, how you doing? Oh, afraid I'm catching a cold. Have you heard that? Surely you've never said anything like that. Afraid I'm catching a cold. I'll never forget, my grandfather said, why are you chasing it? I don't know. I don't know why I'm chasing. I stopped chasing it. And he said, what are you going to do with it if you catch it? I'm not going to catch it. Okay. Well, don't chase it. And it's like one of those moments. I didn't know. What is that all about? But sometimes things become a part of our language. And if you're not careful, they can become a part of your thinking. And your mouth sets the direction that your body goes. If you don't believe me, the Bible talks about a bit is in a horse's mouth, and you can turn that horse. I don't care if it weighs 2,000 pounds. You can turn. Let me put a hook in your jaw. I can pull you any way I want you to go. And your words direct your future. Speak positive words. Speak them over yourself. Speak them over your family. Speak them over your church. Speak them over your pastor. Speak them over your business, your job. And if you can understand that concept, somehow they didn't get it, or maybe I should say they did get it, because the next thing we read about the children of Israel, it says that they died in the wilderness. In other words, as they approached the promised land and they became filled with fear, that's why I say the fear flu swept the camp. I don't know. I suppose they start in September or somewhere thereabout, telling all the signs go up in Walgreens and CVS and what? It says, get your flu shot. Is that right? I think they're going to start doing that in about July next. Get your flu shot. It's July. But they do that because it's a preventative. And maybe it's not too late to get your fear flu shot. Because that fear of the giants was such a deadly virus. Everybody say deadly virus. It killed everybody. The Bible says it this way. They all died in the wilderness. Wow. And it makes an exception. Except Joshua and Caleb. You know what's interesting about Joshua and Caleb? They were the two spies who said, we are able. Why didn't they die? I'll tell you why they didn't die. They had been vaccinated. They had been inoculated. The hypodermic of faith had been inserted in their arm. And that had circulated and created antibodies that when the fear flu attacked them, they were able to fend it off. I feel chills running up and down my body right now. Some of you are wondering, you know, how is it that you can be so full of faith when everybody in your office is saying, we may be laid off. What are we going to do? But I'll tell you why. Because you realize your job is not your source. God is your source. So I don't catch the fear flu. I'm not saying I don't read the headlines. I'm not unaware of things going on. But do you know some? My wife and I were talking about David and Nicole. We talked about you a lot yesterday, and we were talking about them. And I said, you know, I don't know. I've never met a more positive person than David Binion. I honestly have never heard him say a bad word about the devil. David, just for your own sanity, you ought to give him a good cussing every once in a while. You heard what he said? They're over there worrying about the announcements. They're getting said right. What did he say? It's all going to work out. I love that about him. Sometimes when David and Nicole were with me and I'd be carrying the heavy weight of ministry and things and decisions and doing the best I could under the pressure, we'd get in that airplane and David would start laughing, smiling, crying. You can't be depressed around him. I challenge you, try it. Just if you're having a good case of the blues, just come sit down next to David Binion for about 15 minutes. And it's going to cure you. And if not, go on to the hospital and just die because you're close to it. He is so positive. Do you know why? This man has been inoculated with faith. And it is faith that has brought you this far, and it's faith that's going to take you on. Amazing as it is, Moses being the great leader that he was, Moses failed at the very task that God called him to do. I didn't say he was lost, going to hell in a handbasket. I just said, and sometimes we all have to live with failure. Oh, come on, people. You're all looking, yeah, everybody but me. How many of you have ever failed at something? You know, failure is bitter. And you know it was bitter for Moses. While he was in 95% of all the stuff he did, he successfully led a revolution and got the Jewish people out of 500 years of slavery in Egypt. That's good. He led them to transit across a waterless wilderness, parting seas with a stick, hitting rocks so water would flow. I mean, Moses did some amazing things. But the one thing God held out in front of him, he said, I want you to not just lead them out, but take them in to the promised land. He was not able to do that. But what's amazing is Joshua came along and did.
Yes, yes.
I'm going to tell you, I've never started a church. My wife and I talked about that yesterday. And she said, I'm not sure you'd have been very good at it. How's that for a vote of confidence? I wanted to say, what? You know, and then she starts hedging. Well, you're really intense.
And you are.
And I am. And, you know, but the truth is, I've never started a church. But the test of success is whether or not you have successors.
Wow.
Success is not what you accomplish in life. Success is really what you, success is what you set others up to be able to do. It's like you tee the ball up so they can hit it. And you are the one. And maybe that's why I felt like telling you when I stepped up here, I don't need to start a church. But it sure is great to watch somebody that you breathed into start a church. John Maxwell said it to me one time. He said, you'll have no success without a successor. And, you know, what I do in ministry, there's a lot of pastors, their children follow them in ministry. I did pastor. I inflict punishment on a group of people for 10 years. You're laughing. Maybe they didn't. But I did pastor. But really, even when I pastored, I traveled constantly. My ministry has been now for approaching, it's 48, and it could be 49 years. My ministry has been traveling, an itinerant ministry. And to be honest, I think David and Nicole thought that they may spend the rest of their years doing that. But God had planted the seed of dwell.
Yeah.
Actually, what happened, God planted you. He put you in their heart. He put her in their heart. He put him. He planted you in their heart where they said, I want to see other people become successful. And what success begins on Sundays. Oh, you need to put that on Facebook. Tell them I said it. Success begins on Sundays. You give God the first. And what happens is you come in here on Sundays and they feed something in you to make you successfully be a parent that week, to help you successfully have a good marriage that week, to help you successfully do things at your job. Because to be honest with you, we all are a little bit pitiful and we need propping up every once in a while. And when you come in and somebody says, here, let me help you with that. Have you ever noticed that when your kids scrape their knee, they come running to you and sometimes they even forget which knee it was that they scraped? And they make the biggest hullabaloo about, oh, let me see. You haul out your magnifying glass to even exaggerate a scratch. But the truth is, sometimes it's not that they have a boo-boo, a bobo, whatever you call it, so much as they just need a little bit of you. It's not so much that they need something bandaged, is they need to know you're there to bandage. And so they come running to you. And my kids, Band-Aids were like trophies. Look, I got one. And they're proud of it. It's like, you know, you get older, you don't want to limp. But kids, it's just terrible. Why? Because when they run to you, it's not the healing. They don't really, you know, let me kiss it and make it better. Did that ever help anybody? Yes. Did it heal it faster? Well, maybe not. But I sure felt better about it. Why? I'm going to kiss it, make it all better. When we come to church and you put your arms around people, you don't know how much they needed that touch. You don't know how. I walked past a shy girl holding a Dwell sign in the lobby down there, and I could tell she was a little bit shy and she didn't know who I was. I had a hat on. I'm walking with my cane. Don't make fun of me because of it. And she said, hi, and the sign's kind of pointing, like, you know those guys with the arrows that talk about tax-free, get your taxes done here thing? They're doing Dwell things, and I just wanted to say, I'm going there. Just that smile. If you're going to be a greeter at Dwell, your positive affirmation may be the only positive affirmation that some people get in the entire week. So when your pastor pours out of him, out of his joyous well, you need to understand that it is the shepherd's heart. They didn't have to take that long. Moses was not able to get them to do it. But Moses led them up to, but Joshua led them into. I'm saying you're about to come into something. Look at somebody and say, we're about to get into something. Oh, that's a prophetic. You're about to get into something. I like this verse. That's why I said, the Lord spake to me, saying, you have skirted this mountain long enough. Turn north. Verse 7 says this, for the Lord your God has blessed you in all the work of your hand. He knows your trudging through this great wilderness. You know that they sing the song when the saints go marching in. Really? Most usually they go trudging in. But like a horse, or even a camel, they tell me, and I've never ridden a camel. I've been to places where they ride camels. And in Israel, they try to get you up on camels, but camels spit. They do. I'm not talking about like, no, it's nasty spit. And they are mean, and I have seen too many tourists get dumped by an unappreciating camel. I'm not getting up on that thing. I rode horses my whole life. I don't know. Did you ever get on a camel over there? Me, well, smart guy. But they get on this camel. You know what they tell me? That expert camel herders, riders, they have camel races that they can handle a camel at all points because they're trained and the camel's trained and these guys know how to handle it, except when a camel smells water. And they say when a camel smells water, it is impossible to hold back. And they can smell water from miles away. So that can, have you ever watched a camel walk? What happened to my verse up there? You ever watched a camel walk? I would call the camel walk the epitome of trudging. But you let that camel smell water. Katie, bar the door. The saints go marching in. That's right, David. Why? Because they smell. Can I tell you something? I smell the water of the promised land. You're about to get into something. It's time to turn north and stop the circling. And it's about everything that hasn't made sense is about to turn linear. Everything that has felt circular is about to go linear, and direction and speed are about to happen, and God is up to something. Hallelujah. So I guess I just came here today to tell you. God knows what He's doing. He knows where He's going. And He's just asking you to follow along. Paul said one time, he said, follow me as I follow Christ. I'm here to affirm the leadership that God has given you and to tell you that if you can't get along with David Binion, just give up on getting along with people. If you can't love Nicole Binion, you won't love Mary, the mother of Jesus, because she's about as sweet as they get. And that God has placed leadership here, and I am behind them, and God is for them, and you're going somewhere. The future before you is brighter than the past behind you. You've been trudging, but you're about to start trooping, conquering, and doing stuff. Give God some praise right now. Come on.
Thank you for joining us today at the Dwell Church Podcast. For more information about Dwell Church, visit us at dwell.church.